Aloha, folks. Welcome to the Healthy Mouth World Summit live Q&A session scheduled for today, January 21st. Today is, well, yesterday was really, I guess, Saturday was the last day of the Healthy Mouth World Summit, but we've been having so much fun. We kind of continue the process rolling into today. It's going to be a very, very full call. I'm going to see if I can unmute Dr. Holmes' mic. I do see him on here. We have had quite a bit of trouble this week with getting some of the experts on the line. Dr. Holmes, are you there? Can you hear me, sir?
I can hear you, Will. Can you?
Yay, I can hear you.
There was a nice echo and a great delay on it.
But I can hear you. That's a good thing.
Well, it's better than last time, eh?
Definitely. This sounds great. Well, thank you so much for making it, sir. I know that, you're in South Africa right now, correct?
I am, yes.
Wow. So it's, what time is it there right now?
It's midnight now.
Okay, folks. Never say that Dr. Julian Holmes didn't do something for you. My goodness, staying up until all hours of the night to answer your questions. So,
don't worry. I should be going to sleep somewhere around about 1 o'clock tonight, I think, or this morning.
Perfect.
So I'm already in tomorrow mode.
Right on. Hey, so you have the, shall we say, the dreadful position of being on the last day of the Q&A, which means that we have a very, very full call here of people throwing all sorts of fun questions to you. So before we get in, yeah, I think you'll have a lot of fun with it. You know, I mean, you're so knowledgeable. We'll have fun with this. Folks, if this is your first time to the Q&A calls, I do recommend that you type in your questions, because having the questions typed in really, really helps to expedite it. I would like to open up the phone lines, though, to some of you if you'd like to ask specific questions, primarily because, you know, even though we hit a snag doing that earlier in the week and opening up the phone lines to people and they weren't ready to ask questions or whatever, I realized that not opening up the phone lines to talk to the experts didn't allow you to go, wow, this was awesome, Dr. Holmes, thanks so much. And so the experts were answering all sorts of questions, but never getting any direct, wonderful, positive feedback from you all. So by all means, if you do want to ask a vocal question, raise your hand and then write a question into the question and answer box saying, I have a question I want to ask on the phone. And I'll find your name and I'll highlight you and unmute your mic.
Okay.
So we're just going to start at the top here and have some fun with this, and again, I apologize up front. These people have been inundated for the past week with lots and lots of information. So you're not just going to get questions on ozone therapy and dentistry, I'm sure. So feel free to answer what you feel comfortable, and otherwise, you know, pass on it if you need to. Okay, this one is from Leanne, and it says, my dentist agreed to extract a root-filled tooth, which has been in my mouth for several years. He will also remove the periodontal ligament. Any advice for aftercare? Diet, the use of peroxide as a rinse? Unfortunately, there are no dentists on this small island using ozone therapy. Any suggestions for Leanne here, Dr. Holmes?
Okay, yeah, lots. Easiest is if you can get hold of some hydrogen peroxide, mix it so that it's a weak solution, and you can either place it straight into the socket on the end of a cotton wool bud, or just very gently rinse. If you can't get hydrogen peroxide, then ordinary salt in a sort of 1 teaspoonful into a glass with some warm water, and again, use that just to rinse around your mouth.
Perfect.
And the periodontal ligament is just a term for some very fine fibers which actually hold the tooth in place in the bone tissue. So inevitably, when you take a tooth out, you actually rip that tissue to extract and remove the tooth. Now, it's just a question of aftercare, making sure that you look after it, keep it nice and clean, make sure you're pain-free. So if you are given any advice by your dentist, please follow it. The most important thing is be pain-free, keep it infection-free, and make sure you go back to have it checked out by your dentist about a week to 2 weeks after the extraction.
Perfect. And for the sake of plugging your awesome stuff, how would ozonated oils work in this situation?
In my practice, I always give my patients ozonated oil to use. You get accelerated healing and very little bone loss associated with the extraction process. So you're attacking not only the incipient gum disease around that area, you also remember it's going to be sore for about 2 to 3 weeks. So people don't really want to clean there.
Right.
And that's really what you need to do. So, you know, people will go in with a brush, it'll start to bleed, and then they won't touch it again for 3 or 4 weeks.
Right.
By that stage, so much gunk has built up around it that you've got a secondary infection and the whole thing is going completely pear-shaped. So ozonated oils are really good in controlling oral hygiene, making sure that it heals quickly, and it gets you out of pain as well. So there's lots of benefits to using ozonated oils.
Yeah, I figured as much. Okay, this one from Alina. At what point is ozonating a cavity not going to be sufficient? I mean, if you have a superficial cavity and you ozonate it, and then you're approaching this from a dietary standpoint, like Weston Price would teach and others in his lineage, of supporting the system from within, at what point is the cavity too deep to where that would really address it effectively?
Well, the good news is that ozone can be used with any size cavity. So from that point of view, the cavity isn't too big or too large or too small, my apologies. If your question is, can you avoid the cavitation forming and the cavity forming? That's a bit more difficult because you've got to detect it first. And either your dentist has got to use some of the modern diagnostic tools such as small lasers or different types of lights to actually look inside the tooth, or he's got to be really good with his visual examination to recognize an area which is starting to lose minerals. Because if you can get it before it cavitates, you can sterilize it. The sterilization process changes the biochemistry. It then will suck up minerals from the saliva, and then it will remineralize without actually forming a cavity and without the need to drill and fill.
Right. So this really begs a question for me. I mean, what do you think of dentistry of the future, of somebody just having I presume it wouldn't even have to be with the dentist, him or herself, but actually with just a dental personnel, but having an appointment every 3 months and, hey, yeah, I'm here for my 3-month tooth ozonation, and just have your whole mouth ozonated every 3 months to lower the risk.
This was definitely something which we touched on during the recording which we did earlier in the year.
Yeah.
The concept was to produce a mouth guard, so very similar to, say, a mouth guard which you use for playing sports.
Right.
You keep it, and every 3 months you go into your dental practice or to your ozone therapist. They connect it to an ozone generator and to a little suction device to take away the excess ozone, and you sit there for 10 minutes.
Wow.
And that's what you need to prevent disease and prevent decay once every 3 months.
Wow.
Provided you put in place really good oral hygiene.
Sure.
And you start looking very closely at your diet, because ozone is good, but it's not that good.
Right.
Your body is very adept, and the bugs which inhabit you are very adept at using food products even when you actually sterilize that whole region. So it's not just about ozone. It's about how you live your life and how you holistically look after yourself.
Right. Perfect. Okay, next. Here's a question from Marina. Wow. Okay. I have 9 root canals and molars. I already had 2 removed. I have to pull one very soon since it's infected. She feels that she needs to get rid of them all, but what to do about teeth then? What can she do in terms of fake teeth and being able to chew food? Because obviously, they're kind of problematic. You know, what's the best solution that you've come across, sir?
Absolutely. You go from having a mouth full of nice teeth, which you're born with, and then you get a new set, and everyone thinks that's great. And then, of course, over a long period of time, the dentist comes along and says, you know, the bugs have got in there, and you need a hole to be fixed. A filling goes in, and of course, once you actually enter into that cycle of drilling and filling, you can never get out of it. And eventually, right. It goes through to the nerve gets taken out, it becomes root filled. You then have this whole complex of focal infections where you can never really sterilize the tips of the roots, so you've always got a problem area. there are lots of different technologies available now for replacing teeth. So you can go for a very simple denture. If it's just one or two teeth, then you can have crown and bridge. Now, if you're missing all your teeth, or you're about to lose all your teeth, you can use, say, one or two dental implants to help stabilize a denture. So instead of having a denture which flaps around in the breeze and potentially which you can lose, the implant is used like a false root to actually anchor these dentures in place. And that's very successful. Cost is always a factor, so you need to talk to your dental team about that. And always plan that when you've had one implant or two implants placed to, say, secure a denture in place, make sure that there's an upgrade version for you so that you could, when you can afford to, you may have another two or three or four implants in place. And instead of having a denture, you can have then fixed crown and bridge work.
Right.
So there's lots of ways that if it's planned carefully and planned in advance, you can take a patient from having no teeth and a very simple solution with a denture to having two implants, say, to secure your denture in place. And then 3-4 years later, upgrading that with another with more implants, and then you can have a fixed option. So it's like getting your own teeth back over a period of time.
Right. Wow. Fascinating. What do you think of this? There's a lot of questions here, kind of wrapped and encapsulated into this one question. Here is: can ozone be used on an affected root canal or an impacted wisdom tooth and have a positive effect?
The answer is yes to both.
Yeah.
Let's take the infected root canal first. It's part of a treatment protocol. So you've got part of the treatment is to smooth the inside of a tooth so it looks like a nice smooth ice cream cone. So if you can imagine, if we cut the crown off a tooth, you'd be looking down the ice cream cone and it's nice and smooth and clean inside, and the infected portion or the gross infection is removed with instruments. And then you use ozone to actually do your final sterilization. If you've actually got an infection beyond the tip, I know dentists are using ozone actually injected at that point into the bone tissue to kill the infection and to return that area to full normal health again.
Wow.
So yes, ozone definitely has a part to play in root canal work and in edible infections.
Right.
As far as wisdom teeth or partially erupted teeth, ozone can be used for children, say, in the eruption process. Because if you look at, say, tooth number 6 and 7, they are erupting around about age 6 to 9. When teeth come through the gum tissue, it's sore, so they don't clean. You've got a nice little flap of tissue there. And the molars take somewhere in the region of about 9 to 12 months to come fully through. And unless you can actually get underneath that little flap of skin or gum tissue and clean it, by the time that tooth erupts into the mouth, that patient already will have decay in place.
Right.
So one of the treatment protocols we put together a number of years ago is as soon as you can see that little bit of a cusp come through the gum tissue at the back, you slide the ozone tip underneath it, and then you put 5 minutes of ozone there.
Right.
And then you slide another tip in there, and you put a little bit of Fuji Triage. Now, Fuji Triage is a very special glass-based filling material developed by GC in Japan. It contains lots of fluoride and lots of minerals that a tooth then can use to remineralize.
Right.
Because remember, that little hole in the gum tissue is a beautiful protected environment for bugs to get into.
Sure.
And they'll get in there and they'll set up this nice little cycle of infection. So for everyone who's had problems, say, with wisdom teeth, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You've got a little hole, or you can see a little bit of a tooth, but there's a nice broad pathway that bugs can get into and underneath the skin.
Right.
A little bit of food gets in there, you can't clean it out, and then it gets sore. And over a period of a week to 2 weeks, your face blows up like a balloon, your face is out by your ears, and then you get put on antibiotics.
Yeah.
And for most of the patients that I see, they tend to go through these cycles, which tend to get shorter and shorter together. until eventually it's just one long infection and then the tooth has to be taken out. So ozone is really useful for combating simply the infections which build up around teeth and to restore health. It's not going to make that wisdom tooth say come through in a better position so that it becomes a useful tooth then.
Right.
And then you can use the ozonated oils, you could use ozone gas, or you could use ozonated water. So there's a whole host of different methodologies that you could use to clean around that tissue where potentially it's really uncomfortable to get a toothbrush, or where you simply can't get a toothpick in to actually clean the debris out.
Yeah, you really can't get in there with, I mean, that's the beauty to my perspective of ozone is A, it's a gas, or B, you can actually impregnate the oil with the ozone to when the oil then will kind of seep into all the nooks and crannies in a gum tissue.
Exactly. Well, you know, there's a fantastic tool called a water pick, which you can buy. It's like one of these little water cannons that kids play with.
Sure, it's a oral irrigator.
It has a little pulse of water, which you can then irrigate and wash out all the debris.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to put ozonated water into that, and off you go.
Perfect. Let's go on here. Question from Lisa here. What type of orthodontics do you recommend for children with malocclusion? This is a whole other field, Lisa, that we didn't dive into yet with this summit that we'll touch on.
Okay. There are lots of different orthodontic systems which are available these days, from the traditional train tracks to a range of very thin hard plastic molds which guide the teeth into different directions. So I think, Will, when I saw you last, I was wearing something which was, I can't remember the name of it because it's no longer made, but it's like a very thin mold,
wow,
which you change every 2 to 3 weeks for one which is slightly different and guides the teeth into a different position.
Wow.
So you don't actually need train tracks. You need to select your cases very carefully. So Lisa, I would say take your child to a recognized orthodontic practice and ask their opinion. And if necessary, go around from one or two and get different opinions and get different prices. And then you just sort of have to sort of decide sort of who do you feel comfortable with to look after your child.
Perfect. Here's a question from Rachel. We had other experts on the summit talking about all different aspects of oral health and relating to whole body health. We had Robert Gammel here talking about the dangers of root canals, as well as Hal Huggins and Dr. Mark Briner. So people are looking for solutions. They're aware of the potential, not all the time, but the potential risks of leaving a root canal to a dead tissue in the mouth. So if somebody has a root canal removed, what are the options that you see available to them? And, you know, one of the options that we are helping people become aware of is there's actually a biological dentist over here in Hawaii named Dr. Ronald Carlson, who designed a composite bridge. So rather than traditionally crowning the two adjacent teeth to the gap, he actually just builds a composite bridge across it, which we think is a tremendous idea, instead of destroying two potentially perfectly fine teeth in the process of bridging the gap. Any other solutions you have, sir?
Let me just see if I understand the question correctly. Well, the tooth needs root canal treatment, and the patient has decided to have the tooth extracted. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, so your different alternatives. You could do nothing. There is no particular reason that you actually sort of need to put a new tooth there, apart from that it balances the way that your teeth meet and the way that you bite. And it stops food getting into that area, and it basically returns you to a natural smile. So there are compelling reasons that you may want to put a tooth in. For my money, the implant is always the best option, provided you've got enough bone tissue to actually put the implant in place and stabilize it so that it heals. You don't have to touch the adjacent teeth, and for long term, if anything happens to those adjacent teeth, you haven't damage them in any way by either putting a filling or a composite crown or whatever in place, so that you still would be working on, if you like, new teeth. So implant is one option. Second option would be that if say one or both teeth on either side of the gap had fillings, then you could replace those with, say, some of the new plastics or the new porcelains, and you could create basically a stick-in bridge. You then have something called the Maryland bridge. Maryland bridge is a single tooth to replace a missing tooth with either gold or titanium wings, which are then cemented onto the two adjacent teeth. So that's been around for 20, 25 years, I guess. Well accepted by the dental community. Technicians do really nice work. And provided you have a dentist who understands how that system works, then you'll get a nice result. Mm-hmm. The most destructive system is traditional crown bridge, so that each tooth on either side of the gap would be cut for crowns. The technician would make a crown of a particular material, so it could be a plastic or it could be a metal with a porcelain covering. And then between those two teeth, you have a false tooth to replace the missing tooth. That's the most destructive and long-term, possibly the most expensive option as well, because if anything goes wrong with the adjacent teeth which support the bridge, you lose everything.
Right. And seems to be kind of, other than the implant potential solution, it seems to be kind of the go-to route as far as general dentistry.
Well, of course, the cheapest option is to try and keep a tooth as healthy as possible, and I guess that's what we're trying to train our patients to do every day.
Sure.
And certainly there are lots of different technologies which can help patients achieve that. But where the system starts to break down and you have cavities that form and then the tooth needs to be either refilled or removed, then you're into a slightly different ballgame, because patients want something which is going to last forever. That's not what dentistry is about, and we can't actually provide that. We can give you something which has a lifespan with a guarantee, if you like, but it's going to have so many caveats about how you keep it, how you maintain it. You've got to come in every 20,000 miles for a checkup, and so it goes on. Then people do have to understand that the mouth is probably the worst environment for products to actually be successful. You've got all sorts of interesting chemicals which we eat, quite apart from the chemicals that the body actually produces in the digestive process. So we talk about extreme environments in terms of, say, trying to live in Antarctica or at 50,000 meters underneath the sea. Try living in the oral environment for a couple of days, and I think most people would give up after a couple of minutes.
It's a war zone in there. Don't go there.
Okay, yeah. We'll leave it at that one then.
That's great. So a lot of people asking about how to identify a quality home ozonation unit, and we actually plan on doing due diligence and researching on this as well. And so I'll be hollering to you in the coming weeks and months, Dr. Holmes, just to pick your brain on this too. But you want to offer something here for folks who are looking now?
Okay. It's a little price dependent. So if we start with the cheapest system out, is usually a little like a pool pump that you would find in an aquarium, which is just a vibrating diaphragm that injects a pulse of air down the line, which goes through an ozone generator. You're going to pay somewhere between $90 to probably $200, something like that. The next stage up is you get a little bit more control. You can control the time that it runs for, and you might even be able to control the concentration of ozone that it produces. For that, you're going to probably pay an additional $50 to $100. Then you start looking at almost medical devices where, instead of using ambient air, background air in the house, you're going to start to use bottled oxygen to feed the system. And you've got a jump which is going to be anywhere from a couple of $1,000 upwards to $10,000 to $12,000. I mean, for example, the unit which I use to produce the ozonated oils, that's nearly $25,000 worth of equipment. It can get fairly expensive depending on what you want to do, so and how long you want it to last, and do you want to produce just ozonated water and oils, or do you want to do something else with it?
Right.
You know, if you start, one of the concerns I have is if you start to inject ozone into municipal water, there's a lot of nitrates which are produced by that process. So you start to produce quite an acid-based water, which you're going to either drink or use to rinse. Ozone produced by a medical device uses bottled oxygen, is a feed gas, not air. So you don't have the issue of nitrogen compounds getting introduced into those compounds. And that becomes very important, especially when you're going to start ozone treating, say, plant oils. If you start injecting nitric compounds into plant oils, especially the omega oils, not only do they get quite warm and potentially explode, but you also get a whole range of carcinogenic products. And that's what you really want to avoid.
Sure.
So I would say, you know, for people who want to produce, or people who are thinking about producing ozonated oils at home, please don't. If you want to produce very simple, small quantities of ozonated water, then you probably get away with a home unit which just takes ambient air and just pumps it into a glass of water. Okay. If you want to use ozone, say, to deodorize a car or your boat after you've been out fishing, or your fridge or a room volume, then a small home ozone unit is probably going to cost you about $200, and it will do the job really efficiently.
Wow.
So you're going to start now then to look at, say, treating the cuts, the ingrown toenails, your children's teeth, I would start to look at one of the professional models. And again, look to see what instructions come with it, what treatment protocols you get. Does the company actually offer training? Does the company indeed actually sell to a non-professional? So there's quite a lot of things which you need to consider when you're moving away from doing sort of at-home ozone treatment, and you're starting to move into the realms of where the dental or medical professional, or even the ozone therapist, would be using a very different machine to actually achieve the healing effects that you're looking for.
Perfect. Can you, and if you don't want me to put you on the spot like this, please don't answer it, but can you recommend a company to get a small unit if a person wants to use ambient air?
Well, if you go online and you look on some, this small unit is called the SY200, I believe. It's a little while since I've looked at that unit, but it's a very compact unit. It's about 2 inches deep, and it's about 4 by 6.
Okay.
Plugs, it's will work on any voltage from 110 up to 240, or you may have to specify. Again, I haven't looked at the specifications for a while, but you should be able to source them from China.
Right.
So a small home unit, that's ideal. But you wouldn't be able to use that unit to produce, say, ozonated oils. And I would not recommend that you use that for dental or medical work.
Okay. But if a person, for example, wanted to ozonate some water to swish with, would that be applicable?
Yeah, provided you don't run it for too long. One of the properties of ozone is that it's very unstable, which is why it works so well in this sort of situation.
Right.
But the longer you run the ozone machine for, the hotter it gets. And as the ozone generators heat up, they actually destroy the ozone as soon as it's produced. So the longer you run it, the less concentration you get actually out of the unit. So by running it for a long period of time, you actually wind up with a very weak solution of ozone dissolved in the water. So just a few things which you know, people need to be aware of.
Right. So it's really not a one-size-fits-all, it sounds like. Really, as much as the importance of the unit might be, it's having some type of user's manual and a company there that is really willing to stand up and say, we've tested this, we know that if you run it for the X number of minutes, it's going to produce this level of ozonated fluid that you're looking for.
Absolutely, yeah.
Hmm. Okay. And you don't know of one that you can refer the people on the call here to?
Well, you know, the professional model which I use for my own practice is one which I designed, and I have a small company called GCE which we produce. That sells to dentists for somewhere between $4,000 and $5,000.
Right.
I'm probably not going to sell very many of those into a home environment.
Right.
Because they are really designed for professional use. But if people are willing to, or they want to invest in that level, then I'm more than happy to train and actually teach them how to use the machines properly.
Perfect. All righty. Here's a question from Alina again. Okay, I got to stop asking your questions, Alina, and get into other people's here too. How does ozone treatment compare to laser treatment for cavities?
Okay. Lasers work by heating up a very superficial layer of the tooth, and they literally vaporize it or they melt it. Whereas ozone is a gas, and it actually sterilizes without damaging the tooth surface.
It's a very different technique. Yeah.
It's a totally different technique. It's one where it's basically a very controlled form of tissue amputation. So when people are using lasers, you have to be very careful that you don't obviously heat up the tooth too much. So
sure.
A lot of the new dental lasers are using water to cool as well.
Hmm.
And you have to do it sort of bit by bit. I still feel that lasers are looking for a comfortable home in dentistry.
Hmm.
I think they're well established now in medicine, but for dental procedures, they are great for sterilizing root canals. There's a system which is called PAD, or you can ask me what it stands for, photoactivated dentistry.
There you go.
And you basically paint a liquid into the tooth itself. And then when you actually shine the laser light at that, that dye disassociates and actually produces ozone. So it's an interesting mix of the two technologies. Ozone itself is just a simple gas. It will just vaporize any living tissue which is there in the form of polysaccharides or amino acids. So if we go back to basic chemistry, basically, your bacteria are polysaccharides, and so they will be completely broken up by the ozone gas into acetate acid and carbon dioxide. And proteins and the biomolecules those bacteria produce, they too will be disassociated to carbon dioxide and acetate acid. And that goes for fungi and viruses too. Now, if you shine a laser at a bacteria, it heats it up so it just explodes. Because maybe if you think in terms of a bacteria, it's more of a little patch of water. So it's like putting a capsule of water into a microwave and turning it on for a minute, or putting an egg into a microwave.
Right.
Eventually, it'll explode.
Right.
Whereas if you could actually see what happened to the bacteria when it's exposed to ozone, you'd actually see the outside wall will slowly fall apart and turn to dust, and the bacteria just ruptures and dies.
Wow. So it truly vaporizes it. What a trip. Okay. This one question from Tara. I'm sorry if I'm butchering your name there. I'm wondering what to do about an impacted wisdom tooth. My husband's dentist is telling him that all his wisdom teeth are impacted and need to be pulled. If we do this now, how do we ensure that we're doing the least damage possible?
Okay, a little bit depends on how old the patient is. So the reason for the age concern is that the older we get, the harder and the more brittle our bones become. And you run the risk, depending on where the tooth is impacted, that potentially you can fracture jaw bones. So if the tooth is truly impacted and this has started to cause something like a cyst around it, or it's starting to cause decay to start in the tooth which is pressing against, yes, it's time for it to go. Then it becomes a surgical option. you have a choice of going to hospital. There's the anaesthetist will put you to sleep, but it tends to be fairly rough because they basically want you out for as short a time as possible. So as a dental surgeon, we're taught to basically fracture the inside of the mouth away. The tooth drops out, and then you sew them up as fast as you can. So very crudely put, that's how wisdom tooth extraction works in hospitals.
Wow.
In general practice, we tend to be kinder to our patients because we like to keep them alive, and we're not allowed to put them into general anesthesia in the same way that we used to. Right. Certainly in the United Kingdom. So we tend to take a collar of bone tissue away around the tooth, and then we have a variety of, I guess the easiest way we would describe it as the different tools we use to get all that nice crab meat out of the end of the claws. And we winkle away at this tooth until it gets looser and looser, and then eventually it just gives up and pops out.
Right.
Some and plastic. Then you've got to place stitches. Yep. Your patient is going, your husband is going to look like a chipmunk for probably about 10 to 15 days.
Wow.
But with modern pharmacology, there are some fantastic drugs out there which will limit the swelling and control the pain. And after about 4 to 5 weeks, he'll return to normal and he'll wish that he'd done it years ago.
Right. Okay. This question is from Elaine here on the call. Does ozone harm beneficial microbes in any way? This is a great question, Elaine.
That's a really good question because the answer, of course, is yes, it does.
Sure.
But when we're using it in the mouth, we're using it in a very controlled and localized way. So we're not trying to sterilize the complete oral cavity. What we're trying to do is control how ozone attacks the lesion, which is what we want to treat. So, for example, if we take, the most extreme form of ozone treatment would be, say, every 3 months where you put a mouth guard in and you ozone treat the complete arch of teeth. We're only going to ozone treat the teeth. We're not going to treat, say, the whole of the gum tissue surface or the palate or the tongue or the back of the throat or whatever. So by controlling ozone and controlling the way it's delivered and aimed at the area which we want to treat, you can limit the amount of damage you do to the good bugs. Because remember, there are good bugs which actually live in your mouth, and also good bugs which live in your digestive system as well.
Sure.
So you don't want to wipe them all out, and you actually want to support them as well. So ozone, provided it's used with care, the damage which you do to the good bugs is really limited. Unlike, say, antibiotics, whereas you've got one infection, say, on the end of your finger, your doctor gives you some antibiotics for it, and you wipe every single bug everywhere in your body just to treat that end of the finger.
Right, that makes very much sense. Okay. This one is from Joanna here on the call. I want to preface that, of course, you, Dr. Holmes, have a company that produces ozonated oils. So obviously you're biased, but you've also been at this for a long time, which is why we are having you on the summit here. Her question is, are any of the ozonated oils you sell better than the others?
No. Every single ozonated oil which you buy will contain some ozone. The difference in the oils which I produce is that every batch is tested. We also have the seal of approval from the South African government, from the health authority, which nobody else does in this country, and which I have never seen in any other country either. So as a company, we've invested a huge amount, not in just the research, but also producing a product which is, each batch is measured correctly, it's reported correctly, and it has a product license as well. What you tend to find on the web are lots of small producers who I'm sure are producing really good products, but they don't do any testing, and they really actually don't know how effective or ineffective their oils are.
Right.
And it's one of those issues which crops up time and time again within the ozone community. That there's a lot of people out there producing some very interesting products, but they don't bother to try to test what they're producing. And for some of them, they don't actually understand the chemistry. So if I take you back to one of the questions, Will, which was asking about home ozonators and could they produce ozonated oils from it. If you start using a home ozonator or an ozone machine which is driven by a natural background air feed, you're going to get lots of nitric compounds which can get into the oils, and that potentially is going to cause real damage, especially if patients start to drink or ingest these products.
Okay.
So you actually do need some form of control, and there should be some form of registration process for people who are producing oils and who want to sell them over the web or into the health food shops.
Yeah, one would think so. I mean, I think it's still probably a very young international process here that, hopefully in time we'll see more awareness increase on the subject.
Well, it'd be nice to have a little bit more awareness. But remember, ozonated oils have been produced for over 200 years.
Wow.
It's not a new technology, Will, but this is the really interesting part about ozone treatment. Ozone first came up for discussion in medical circles in the early 1800s. So for the last 200 years, we've had ozone being used in medicine and then in dentistry from around about 1914 onwards.
Wow.
Since that time, there's been a huge volume of research written, not only about ozone gas and its relation to medicine, dentistry, and general healthcare, but also if you look at the technology which goes into sterilizing water, which goes into the pharmaceutical industry, and also into, say, the microcircuitry industry as well. I mean, if you consider that every single PCB chip which goes into, say, your watch or your cell phone, has been sterilized with ozone, then you start to understand that ozone has lots of different uses virtually across the board of virtually every single technology or food product which we either drink or eat or wear or use.
Wow.
If you look at how, say, farm slurry or the protein wastes in animal waste is controlled, you control it with ozone.
Wow.
It has a part to play in just general living. And it does need to be sort of not more highly regulated, but there's a lot of education which people need to sort of take on board before we get lots of small producers thinking, oh, well, I can get in on this bandwagon and I could produce some nice ozonated oils, which I'm sure they could do. But they need to actually understand what the chemistry is about, and they need to understand what the pitfalls are as well. Because potentially, there is a lot of potential to do quite a lot of damage to people by selling products if you don't actually understand what you're making.
Sure. How about, I have a question here from Sue. How does somebody find dentists that use your ozone strategies and techniques? Sue's looking for somebody in New York City, but in general, how can folks search for that?
Well, we do have a central register of people who I know treat patients who are dentists who have been trained to use ozone. If you go to a website which is called www.the-o-zone, so that's the-o-zone.cc, and then if you click on the ozone logo, and then down the right hand side, once that second page loads, you look for where do I find an ozone practitioner. And for the US, I've now split it up into state by state. So click on your state, and if there is an ozone practitioner in your state which I know about, or who the International Association of Ozone in Healthcare and Dentistry knows about, they will be listed there.
Perfect.
If you can't find one, email me. Email Will, He'll send it on to me.
There you go.
And so we'll go around and we'll see if we can sort one out for you.
For those of you looking, we're going to post a blog fairly soon. Once I take a nap for a few days and we get some family time and rest some, we're going to post a blog. One of the first ones we'll write will be various resources that we've gathered from the summit, like Dr. Holmes's network, to be able to search for folks who utilize ozone in their practice, because they are out there, and we'll just make them real easily available. You know, stay on our mailing list, you'll get it. This question from Estrella here, that's a good question. Are some of your oils better for specific purposes than others? She's asking which of your oils are best for specific purposes, but maybe there aren't any better than others.
Okay. About 8 years ago now, I authored a paper where we looked at the different concentrations of omega oils in natural organic products. Now, the reason that we wanted to do that is that some oils have more omega bonds which we can utilize to capture ozone than others. So if you take something like avocado oil, avocado oil has about 71 double bonds per unit volume, as compared, say, to linseed oil, which has 221 double bonds per unit oil. So it's in the same way that you can buy, say, penicillin or amoxicillin, 500 or 250 or 1 gram, whatever. So we produced a range of oils. And I have to admit that, you know, after about 3 or 4 years of producing these different oils, I honed in on one, which is the linseed oil, and started to use it exclusively. Until last year, when I came across a piece of research which had been written in Cuba and in conjunction with some German scientists. And they found that at the different stages of tissue healing, you needed different concentrations of ozone to maximize that healing potential at each stage. So you start off with a linseed oil on your bare raw tissue. After about a week to 2 weeks, you change that to either sunflower or to olive oil, and then you keep on that for about 4 to 6 weeks, and then to finish off the healing, you then go to a much weaker oil, so you change to the avocado. So I've now switched my patients back onto a fairly rigid regime, especially when I do oral surgery, on which oil they should be using for how long and how to use it as well. Whereas previously, it was just use one oil, use it for the whole period. And yeah, patients do heal, and they'd heal much faster than you would expect if they didn't have the oil. But what we're finding now is by changing that regime and that treatment protocol, they're healing even faster.
Wow. Let's tackle Melissa. She's been very patient here. She says, I grind my teeth at night. She does have a night guard, but sometimes either takes it out or comes out during sleep. Is there anything she can do to stop grinding her teeth? And first of all, Melissa, I'm going to say holistic practitioners here would be tremendous in addressing this. So I would contact somebody who works with blood chemistry to look into that, as well as, cranial sacral or other, tools to deal with, more of a holistic approach. But perhaps, Dr. Holmes, you have something you want to add to this.
Well, also, I would also try and figure out what is it that actually triggers the grinding process. Because there's a lot of research to suggest that people who are highly stressed or who have emotional episodes in their lives grind, and then as that emotional episode or that stress diminishes, so the grinding habit disappears. Also, if you've had lots of fillings done in the past, you change the actual patterns on the teeth. So your teeth don't meet in quite the same way. And your mouth is then constantly trying to figure out where a comfortable resting location is. So, yes, I would definitely find a dentist who specializes in grinding habits. And you should be able to do that through the American Dental Associations if you're in the States, or your local dental associations in for different countries. And they should be able to guide you to dentists who have those skills. Because you're really stepping away from the general dentist and you're looking for somebody who has specific knowledge in how to treat the patients who grind, because they do present with lots of different issues which need to be looked at. It's not just about the grinding process itself. You have to look beyond or behind that and figure out, well, what is actually, what's the root cause of why are you actually grinding when potentially there's no real visible signs outwardly as to why those teeth should be shifting around all the time in a sleep.
Perfect. Well, this is a loaded one here that I'll ask you. If someone has partially crumbled wisdom tooth, not impacted, can they use the ozone to sterilize the hole while they work on remineralizing the tooth?
Yes, actually they can. I mean, if you take really extreme examples, and this is not just about wisdom teeth, but there are certain congenital conditions where people don't actually form the right layers of enamel when teeth come through. It's a condition which is called the melogenesis imperfecta. And I actually treated one of these patients very early on in when we started the research around about 1998-1999. He had tremendous sensitivity because he had no enamel on his teeth at all, just raw dentine, which was very sensitive. So we treated that with ozone, trying to actually take the patient out of sensitivity and pain. And inadvertently, what we found was his teeth got much harder and remineralized at the same time as taking him out of pain as well. So the answer is, if you can clean that crumbling tooth, and provided you don't have lots of nooks and crannies where food is constantly getting in and you can eliminate the active decay, ozone is perfect for helping to bump start that remineralization process. And really, there is no need to have that tooth removed. Right. In fact, actually, we could go one stage further. Very early on in the research, we looked at something called self-cleansing cavities. So you've basically got a cavity in the tooth, which is hollow and saucer-shaped. So it's easy to keep clean. And what we found was these cavities healed to a glassy finish. So it sort of begs the question, and certainly what it came up in when I was lecturing on this particular aspect, is, well, that's all very well, Dr. Holmes, but when are you going to put a filling in? And of course, the answer is, as a profession, we're taught that if we see a hole, we're taught to put a filling in. And from a patient's perspective, or the general public's point of perception, is that I have a hole, therefore I need a filling. Whereas in fact, actually, we've probably got it wrong. Because if we can create just naturally natural areas which are self-cleansing, and you can actually get the ozone in there to start the remineralization, you probably don't need fillings after all.
Wow.
So just something to actually think out of the box. I'm sure there's going to be lots of comments like, well, you know, I wouldn't walk around with holes in my teeth, and I know there's going to be some dentists who are going to come around and say, how can you possibly say that to people, because, you know, you should put fillings in there and restore it to natural function.
Right.
You know, when we were all back in Stone Age, we all had self-cleansing areas because we ground our teeth. We didn't have filling materials then. What is it about 21st century where we expect perfection? You know, little blemish on the tooth, let's put a filling in, let's turn these teeth white, let's put nice bonded bridges in place.
Right.
You know, it's a very sort of modern phenomena that we have a blemish, therefore we need treatment.
Right.
In fact, actually, if we started to accept the blemishes a little bit more, we'd probably be a lot healthier.
Yeah. So let me take one more shot at a question with you here. Still getting a lot of questions on root canals. And obviously, I think you really effectively addressed this in your lecture, that in the original interview, that if a dentist is using ozone in their office during the root canal to be able to ozonate the exposed tissue inside the tooth during the canal process, that makes a lot of sense. What about a person who already has a root canal? Can ozone help with that?
Yes, and I actually did sort of mention that in passing a little earlier.
Yeah, I just want to take a shot at it too.
Because there are, if you have a little infection, say, right at the tip of the root in the bone tissue, you probably don't want to dismantle that tooth completely, especially if the root filling has a nice seal right at the tip. So there is a technique where you can drill through the soft tissue, through the bone, to the tip of the root, and then you just place a known volume of ozone in that area. And certainly for the practitioners I've talked to, they get fantastic results by doing that.
Wow. Perfect. See if we've got any others here. Oh, we got a lot still.
You know, well,
here's a great question.
Actually,
go ahead.
What I was going to suggest was, if you've got a list of questions which you can send me,
yeah,
I'll write in the answers and send it back to you, and then you can send it on to the various people.
Wow,
or
that'd be great.
If you send me their email addresses, I'll just send it off.
Perfect. I'm also thinking that you know, I'm finding that I'm really enjoying interviewing folks like you. And then particularly, I want to be able to open up the phone lines and have other people chime in and ask you their direct questions. So I think in the months to come, you'll hear from me again saying, hey, Dr. Holmes, you want to arrange another interview where we can get questions answered?
Absolutely. It would be useful if I could see the questions as well somehow.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure. There must be a way that we can do that.
Yeah, there definitely is with GoToWebinar. I'm just new at this, so
yeah.
You know, I know I can actually share my screen so that everybody could see it, and you could read the questions too, which would be great.
That would certainly make your job a lot easier, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So one last question here from Melissa. For those who are interested in the use of ozone in dentistry and healthcare but aren't going to be able to make the conference in Vegas, will there be a way to access the information from the conference? Or do you have any plans on encapsulating that information for folks?
Yes. Each of the lectures will be videotaped, and they will be available from the association webshop after the meeting. At this stage, that part is done by other board members, and I actually don't know how much it's going to be. But I know the guys would have figured out by the time we end what the costs involved are going to be, and the prices will go up on the International Association webpages.
Perfect.
So
okay.
If you want to know, visit the International Association webshop, and after the 10th, prices should be up then.
Perfect. And just so that we can get, so everyone here can hear about it one more time, when is it and what's going to be covered?
Okay, that's a big question, Will.
Yeah, really.
give me just a couple of seconds and I'll bring up the program because I've just finished not doing a final edit because I'm sure that there's going to be quite a lot more.
Yeah, really.
So, we start on Wednesday the 6th of February in Las Vegas at the D Hotel. There's a welcome cocktail, and I will be sort of welcoming everybody at 8 o'clock the following morning with really just a very short introduction as to what we're going to cover and some of the new research in healthcare. We then have Dr. Carlos Nogales from Brazil, South America, talking about ozone in endodontics.
Wow.
And then our first keynote speaker is Professor Ziad Fahmy from Germany. And he's talking about ozone in the treatment of musculoskeletal pain and inflammation and injecting ozone into joints.
Wow.
Then later on the day, we have Bob Walker from the USA. He's talking about balancing the immune systems with ozone and nutrition. Okay, so Friday, we have Professor Sylvia Melendez. Sylvia runs the Ozone Institute in Cuba, and she's talking about ozone oxidative preconditioning for acute renal failure. Sylvia has been around in ozone research for at least 25 years now.
Wow.
She is a wealth of information, and she actually runs that country's ozone clinics.
Huh.
Then we have Professor Nabil Massoua from Egypt. He's talking about ozone therapy in hepatitis C, healing ulcers, and the use of ozone for athletic performance.
Wow.
So slightly different from Mr. Armstrong, who used all sorts of interesting drugs which they could detect. Ozone is indetectable.
Huh.
So perhaps we have the perfect product. We then have another guest lecturer from the States, David Minkoff. He's talking about the uses of ozone and amino acid supplementation in clinical practice. So he's a doctor, so he's talking about it from a medical point of view.
Right.
And then we have Frank Schallenberger from the USA again, 30 years of experience using ozone in internal medicine practice.
Wow.
And then we have a dentist who called Dennis McCullough, who I've known for a long time. He's talking about the use of ozone in sterilizing water tubing. That actually starts to become quite important, because if your dentist doesn't keep his water lines nice and clean within that dental unit, it is a huge potential source of cross-infection. And personally, I'm just waiting for the day where somebody catches a very nasty bug and they actually manage to associate it with the last dental practice. Because I'm sure that most dental practitioners, certainly speaking for myself, I treat a lot of immunocompromised and elderly patients. And if I'm not super vigilant about how clean my water lines are, I'm sure we have patients who go home ill and wind up with a flu-like infection, but they haven't made the connection with the rubbish that comes out of our water lines. Saturday, the 9th of February, we have Professor Edward Lynch, Ozone Revolution in Healthcare and Dentistry. Edward, I guess, has really put ozone into the modern world, and he was the editor for the book Ozone Revolution in Dentistry, which both he and I wrote a number of chapters together, and he really started off, if you like, modern ozone in modern dentistry. Then we have Robert Rowan. He's talking about ozone and cancer, oxidation in advanced healthcare. And then I've designed the meeting so that we have a series of masterclass roundtables. So although each lecturer has 2 to 4 hours to present information, a lot of people don't like asking questions, especially where you've got a large group of people listening. So we have around masterclass roundtables where we have 3 lecturers, and for example, we have Silva Menendez, Professor Marsoff, Isaac Junti, and Robert Rowan. And it can be 10, 15 people, and you can ask them whatever question you like. So it's really about sharing information in a very protected environment so that everybody feels safe. And it doesn't matter what the question is, you're going to get an answer. Then on Sunday, which is our last day, we have Edson Nave from Brazil. He's talking about the uses of laser and ozone in atraumatic restorative treatment. Then we have another roundtable where Edward and Bill Dom from Upland in California are talking about practical applications of ozone in healthcare. Then we have some masterclasses where we're going to have demonstrations. The final question and answer session is around about 1:30, and then we close. So we're packing an awful lot into the 4.5 days, and I keep getting still requests for more time, and I'm still trying to sort of cut other people's lectures down and squeeze new ones in.
So one more question for you.
We've got enough material here probably for about 10 days, I would think.
Yeah.
But that would be too long.
So what's the name of the conference? A lot of people ask and how they can find out more information about it. How would they find it on a website, okay, Dr. Julian?
You find more information on the web if you go to www.iaohd.org. Follow the links, and that will give you both the speakers and the program. You can register, or you can join.
One more time. I-A-O... H is in Henry, D is in dog, correct?
I-A-O-H-D.
I-A-O-H-D.
.org.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Dr. Julian, hey, it's beyond the hour. I appreciate it. I don't want to overwear my welcome, so I can call on you again, sir, and let's do this again. Thank you so much.
You can always call. It's not a problem.
That's always a pleasure. I don't want to keep you up past 1:30, though, in your time, so that's not cool. Folks, thank you so much for coming along to the summit here and catching this last Q&A with us. Gray Graham emailed me this morning and said that he was in bed with the flu, so didn't feel like he could adequately be able to talk and answer your questions. So thankfully we had Dr. Julian Holmes here to be able to wrestle all these questions of the last day. By all means, check your inbox tonight. We're going to send out another email with steps that you can take to begin along this path to greater oral health here now that you've been totally inundated with all these ideas this past week, getting lots and lots of positive stuff and still more questions to come. Every time we walk further into this pathway, we're faced with, again, new questions within any field that we're addressing. Thanks so much for attending, Dr. Julian Holmes. Thank you so much, sir.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and I've just actually put the link on an email for you.
Perfect.
It should be in your inbox in a couple of seconds.
Wonderful. We'll post it. Thank you. Aloha, folks.
Okay.